Hey guys, we're reading from Luke's Gospel. I'm really glad about that. I've loved our sojourn in John, but we need to read from Luke. There's some good things going on in Luke's Gospel, and that's where we are now. It's a part of that season after Pentecost now. We'll be in Luke's Gospel almost the entirety now of the season until we get to that last Sunday, Christ the King Sunday. The 29th proper. We're on proper 7. We've actually missed a couple of them because Easter is where it is, and Pentecost is where it is, and Trinity Sunday is where it is, and so they've swept over and covered up a little bit of Luke for us. But I'm glad we're there now. I'm glad we're in Luke's Gospel. There's some neat things going on. We don't get this story every time it shows up in year C, because Easter could have shifted even yet one more week, and this would have been Trinity Sunday in some year, too. So it's good we're here. Part of our work is going to be now to live faithfully in those lessons as they show us who Jesus is from Luke's perspective, too. And we get a whole batch of them now. 29 minus 7 is what, 22 lessons. We're going to be in that part of that story about who Jesus is. Luke's part of the story. The demoniac is an unusual character, a remarkable character too. I mean, there's nobody else like him in any of the Gospels. We need to be careful about how we read this story with the demoniac in it. Too much of what we try to do from a 21st century perspective is to try to talk about mental illness, and that we wouldn't have diagnosed demon possession as that. We would have called it something else, you know, that somehow we've got wisdom about these things. And if we had been around back then, well, that poor man would have been treated differently. We'd have for sure at least found him a room in Milledgeville or something like that, right? I mean, I want us to put that away. I don't think the story is inviting us to compare our medical treatment of the mentally ill with what people did with what they called demon possession back then. I just don't think the story is really presenting that sort of invitation. And so I want to caution us. I want to say, let's not go there. Let's not go there. Let's look at the details of the story and see if we can't find something that does speak to us, though, in our contemporary context. The first thing that sticks out to me is that language, that militaristic language that's in there. Did you notice how many demons he was possessed by? The same size as a Roman army. I wonder what's going on there. I mean, we know for sure that Luke's take on the gospel talks a lot about the reversal of fortune, that the mighty will be lowered and the lowly will be lifted up. And so that these structures of oppression and dominance are going to be significant players in the way that Luke tells the story. So that when the demon-possessed man says that his name is Legion, he's also making room for everybody who is possessed or oppressed, you could say. Everybody who's under the thumb, out of control of their own lives because someone else is in control of their lives. The demons is an internal possession, but the Romans would have been exercising an external possession of the land. And they were. This is in that region. Another telling feature of the story, that this is out of town. I used the term boondocks this morning, the sticks, as ways to talk about stuff that's sort of out there in those hinterlands that us city folks wouldn't dare go unless we had some special reason for being there. The way you know that that's one of those regions is because they're making their living on pigs. That wouldn't have been an approved Jewish practice. It's not just that these are Gentiles out there. These are folks that are down to the end of their ropes, and they really haven't got much left to hang on. They're getting by, And they've made a living now in this community doing exactly something that has a very limited clientele. I mean, there's no good Jew that would eat pork. Not one. But here they are cultivating pigs, too. And, you know, I really think that's a mistake. I really think that the at least Paul should have said something about the spiritual gift of baking. You know, I just think that's wrong. But there it is. And so you've got markers in this story about good guys and bad guys, Romans and Jews, Gentiles and faithful, the ones who practice the right rules of hygiene. All of those east and west demarcations are being implied in this story too. And so Jesus is out in that region. He's out of town. Somebody said, Father Dan, if you were going to say to a young person these days something equivalent to the Sticks or the Boondocks, what would you say? And I would just say, Buckhead. I'm teasing. Where is that place? How, Alex, if I were going to use a word that said out in the middle of nowhere, it's really kind of a little bit dangerous, a little bit scary, strange. The people out there can't be trusted. What word is there now being used for something like that? How do people say that now? I mean, country just doesn't really hit it, does it? I really put you on the spot, haven't I? It's tough. I'm sorry. I like you better than that. Okay? Middle of nowhere. In another one of the Gospels, it's called the region of 10 cities, the Decapolis, which is another Roman title for that area. Another way for just dividing it up and just saying out there in the 10 county regions. Okay? So there's something going on in the way that Luke is helping us see divisions and separations, possessions and being possessed, being oppressed too. I mean, all of that's being laid out here in this story. So he's really packing in a lot of features for us to attend to. And there's another piece to it too. There's the actual way in which the community has dealt with this man in his mental illness, in his possession. They really have done what most of us do when we are confronted with circumstances like this. We get those people the heck out of here. And we do what? Back in the day, what do? We send them to where? Milledgeville. Right? The biggest kitchen, the biggest institutional kitchen in the country is in Milledgeville because that hospital had one kitchen for serving everybody on the property all at once. Did y'all know that? I mean, that's how big that hospital was. That's what we did with folks is we put them out there. I did my summer of clinical pastoral education at seminary at a place called Lakeshore Mental Health Institute, just outside of Knoxville. All right, old Eastern State in Knoxville, right there on the river. It's really a gorgeous piece of property. But they were suffering the same thing that Milledgeville was suffering. They were trying to downsize mental health care. In Tennessee, they called it downsizing. What they meant was we're not spending any more money on it. And the hospital was closing down. The rooms were shutting down. They didn't want to refit the facility because it had too much asbestos. Sound familiar? And so that they were doing what they called community care. And they were shunting the money toward counties. And you take care of your crazy people. Well, those counties didn't want to do that. They wanted to put those people away. I mean, we've got our lives to live. We've got stuff to do. And the slope starts slipping at that point. We start substituting mercy for mercy with things like management. And if we just quieten things down and just sort of get those people out there on the margins away from us, then everything will be fine. So Luke's got something else going on in this story too. It has to do with centeredness and peripheries. It has to do with self and others. It has to do with that mentality we have that somehow there is a there that we can put things in, and that there isn't here. And we know how dangerous that is, too. Where does our pollution go that it doesn't come back to haunt us some way? And so all of these things are going on in this story. There's one other thing that I think is important, and we see it mostly in the fact that they were cultivating pigs. Every single one of us has some point in our lives when we have accepted a substitute for that better thing that we really loved or wanted. Hear me? Every single one of us has some point in our lives when we have accepted a substitute for something that we really need more, or that we really want, or that is really more important, but we have learned to step back and slide a little bit and let it go and live off of those substitutes. You know what we call that in modern culture? Addiction. Because substitutes are never good enough. And living off of second best turns into addiction. Because you can never get enough of it. And you're always living with that substitute the rest of your life. And when it was love that you needed, but getting high that you put in the place of it, oh my goodness, you can't get high enough, can you? Or when it was depression that you needed to name in your life, and instead you opened a bottle, you can't drink enough, can you? And we know these things about human condition. We know these things about us. That's so much of how addiction works. Now, Paul's the expert here. I have not cleared anything I have said with Paul. Okay? But I'm not far off now. Shake your head. That culturally, we start living off of substitutes. We just get by. Life's hard. The Romans are in the way. Well, we can raise pigs to make a living. Let's just do that. And then what happens? When the pigs are gone, what happens? Those people got just as mad as the demons did. The language that they use to complain to Jesus that the pigs are gone is identical to the language that the demons used to indicate their fear of Jesus. Same language. Which is exactly what happens when you start to take those second best things away from folks. Man, they fight for those. You fight for supporting your addiction a whole lot longer than you would for other things. That's why those moments when people's addictions are confronted by the ones they love are called interventions. You've got to step in there. You've got to make a difference. That's really what Jesus is doing. He's performing an intervention. Now, again, modern medical practices would do things differently. But the story is being told from Luke's perspective that Jesus has the solution to those lives lived on the margins, away from things, when people have learned to let it slide and live off of the substitutes and just go along to get along. Those people who are oppressed but don't have the energy to fight back against their oppressors. They instead would rather just keep farming pigs. And Jesus intervenes into that circumstance. And that's hard. It's hard for those folks. They're not ready for that to happen. And they complain. But they see this guy who was healed. And the demon's gone. And he's got his clothes on. And he's able to point at Jesus and say, look what he did for me. And then that interesting view, because what Jesus says to him is, go home and tell them what God has done for you. And instead he goes to town and tells them what Jesus did for him. And I want to say to you, that's the same thing. One of the things that Luke is always going to put in front of us is this sense that Jesus is the best God has to present to us. Jesus is with us because God means for him to be with us. And so for us to respond to his presence is the same as responding to God's presence. That's consistent with Luke's teaching. And that's the opportunity that we have presented to us in this lesson today, is to look at our lives and to be honest about those ways in which we've let it slide, or that we have just kept our heads down and just gone along to get along. And instead, Jesus wants to say to each one of us, hey, go home and tell them how good God is to you. That's something that we can do Sunday in and Sunday out, Monday in and Monday out, Tuesday in and Tuesday out. That's good, faithful living, to look at your everyday and to be able to acknowledge that God has done something good for you and to share that with others. So what's in your way of doing that? Are you demon-possessed? Some of you might be. Are you farming pigs? Ellen, forgive me. You know what I mean, don't you? Do something about that. Are you accepting substitutes for that real thing that is God's love of you and for the difference that love can make in the world? Stop. Get dressed. Go to town. And tell them how good God is. Or how good Jesus is. There's no substitutes for that. Amen.